New York and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter.
Today's topic concerns animal behavior. Now, many people that are in our audience, doesn't matter if you live in the United States or if you live in the far corners of the earth, pretty much everybody out there at one point or another has had a pet. And have you ever just come home completely exhausted, couldn't wait to crash on the couch and just disappear and drift off into the land of Nod and just allow all your day's stresses fade away, and then you hear this noise, and it's a familiar sound, but it just won't stop, and it's not the faucet dripping, and you're not really too sure what it is, and then you realize that it's actually your cat or dog busy grooming themselves. Well, you would normally ignore this sound. It's too hard to ignore, especially when you're dead tired, but any little noise is really just going to keep you awake. So you tolerate it for a while, but then it gets to the point where you really get annoyed. So you call out with a really stern voice, expecting your pet to stop. However, chances are it's not going to be effective because your animal companion appears to be involved in a bad habit that is basically obsessive and compulsive. Now, do you think this could be a medical condition? Little do we realize that your animal companion is actually trying to communicate with you. As he or she continues to lick their fur excessively, and they just do this in such a way, it kind of reminds me of Felix Unger from The Odd Couple. And without the awareness that the licking is actually a form of communication, most of us have absolutely no idea and assume that it's some type of a topical issue. So we basically break out the flea comb and search for anything from fleas to a tick or whatever you think that it might be. And then, you know, there's the typical trip to the vet where some people don't even check. They say, oh, got to take them to the vet. And then the vet, of course, in most cases, is not going to find anything. So their solution is to just give the animal a shot that's some type of a steroid or maybe even a round of antibiotics. And, of course, this doesn't work. So a few days later, to even weeks later, you find that your pet continues this compulsive licking. So, you know, we keep going back and forth, until inevitably you figure out that, okay, this is a waste of money, or, you know, there's got to be something else. So, you know, this is something that many people simply overlook. And today I have the pleasure of having my favorite animal expert and animal advocate, Laura Lassiter, back on the show to talk about this. So at this point, I'd like to welcome Laura to the show. Hi, Laura. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jean. How are you doing?
I am fine, and I have so many questions I want to ask you because I didn't realize that my perfect little feline, I just assumed that she was a complete neat freak. She does this. She constantly is grooming herself, and I never realized that it's very loud. And actually, before I knew about today's topic, I had noticed it, but I didn't really pay it much attention. I just figured, well, my cat, her name's Belle. Belle is just as I said, she's a neat freak. If her water in the summertime isn't cool enough, she won't drink it. If her food spills out of her dish, she won't eat it. She's really a mispress, you know. So I just kind of assumed that with her fur, she was just, you know, it was just a continuation of her typical disposition.
Yeah, well, you know, trying to come up with the topic for this show because, as you know, we talked about several things and everything, and being out at Big Cat Rescue, excuse me, because a cat is a cat is a cat. It doesn't matter the size. Sometimes we have a cat that will be what appears to be over-grooming, and then this last week, I had talked with so many of my clients, and being down in Florida, licking can really be a problem. Licking really isn't the problem, but, you know, it's a symptom. And I want to be very clear, as you said in the very beginning, June, where when animals are licking, it is a form of communication, even with the big cat. So if we can approach our animal companion's behavior from, oh, they're trying to talk, they're trying to say something to me. Now, what is it? Because a lot of times, like you said, we get home and we're really tired, and or we'll be in bed in the middle of the night, you know, and they'll be on the bed and they start licking, and, you know, you think you're on a vibrator or something, and you're thinking, what are they doing, you know, and why at this period of time, which I'm going to explain later on in the show, these are clues, Jim.
So what are they trying to say? Are they trying to say that they're not happy, or they're concerned about something, or, you know, is this a case where your dog or cat has some type of insecurity?
Well, I always approach everything from an energetic perspective. In other words, when I go talk with the animals, I don't get into the, you know, I don't look at what breed they are, or I know nothing about all of that on purpose. And so from an energetic perspective, because that's really at the core of what's going on. We can sit there. I've seen some of my clients pick up, especially their cat, you know, because picking up a 50-pound dog is a little more challenging. But, and they'll turn them over and they'll say, see, you know, and it looks like what I call a farm mower, M-O-W-E-R, you know, where they'll, instead of a lawnmower, you know, they're a farm mower because they've just, you know, they've got this strip of hair that's gone, and it's not really funny. They really are suffering. But, you know, some of the positions they get these animals in to try to discern what's going on, you know, we could actually probably create some new yoga moves, because it's, you know, they really, you know, I mean, there's not an inch that they haven't searched, and as you know, we very seldom come up with anything. So from a energetic perspective, let's just all start with the easiest, and most everybody knows, whenever your dog or your cat comes and licks you, and sometimes, you know, they get in the habit of licking you also, just not them, that is a form of communication. It's affection and love. That is one possibility, okay? So we're going to get the no-brainer out of the way real quick. But other things, and a lot of this, too, I have discovered through my communication with the animal. So this isn't, like, written anywhere per se or anything. Let's start with, I know probably a lot of people will notice their animals, especially dogs, will lick their paws at bedtime. Now, there's clues here. So if we can kind of go on a scavenger hunt or think like detectives as we are going through this process, it's going to give us a lot of clues, because I'm going to integrate some traditional Chinese medicine here, which, you know, if anybody's ever gotten acupuncture or anything, all they do is work with energy. Mm. So why would your animal lick their paws at night, especially at night, not so much through the day? Because that in and of itself is kind of strange, don't you think?
Yeah, you know something, I remember my dog passed away a couple months ago, but I remember she used to do that at night. And, you know, now that you're mentioning this, and that's the interesting thing about animal behavior, unless somebody really points it out to you, for the most part, and, you know, I love animals, but I don't really pay attention to this stuff because, you know, we just don't think of it.
No, they're patterns. And, again, you know, when I work with any animal, even people, I look for patterns, because that's going to show me the relationship and also make the connection for me. So if we can first observe a pattern, okay, let's take the dog, for instance. and or the little kitty at night licking paws. Well, most of the time when I've talked with these animals that specifically do this, they have been taken from their mother at a very, very young age. Now, I work with a lot of people. A lot of my clients have rescued animals, and so they don't know their background until we talk with them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, they start to share with me that a lot of times they've been taken from their mother very, very young. Now, when, you know, we're out doing rescue, because I do this also on the trap, neuter, release programs, a lot of times, you know, we catch the feral mothers, June. Well, they're hard to catch, but we do catch them. And we've unfortunately been able, the babies have been as young as a week, maybe 2 weeks old. They have to be bottle fed and everything, and we keep them with their mother. Now, sometimes we will also find the babies and the mother has, you know, left, or we're still trying to trap her. And so, you see, so right there, unknowingly what we're doing is we are taking the babies away from the mother. This is kind of a unique situation because a feral cat can produce up to 75-plus babies a year. And so it's real important for us to get a hold of mama as soon as we can and, you know, spay her so that, you know, we've got this population problem under control. But anyway, so when the babies, even though they've got good care, because the rescue girls I work with bottle feed every 2 hours, the foster parents, and but still, they're taken away from mama. So this is a coping mechanism that they will develop in order to comfort themselves. So, and it doesn't matter if they're stressed or not, because mama often licks the baby, not only to groom them and keep them clean and everything, but it truly is, it's more than affection also. It is a way of being with an animal where they will communicate that love and affection, but also comfort their babies, okay? And if they've been taken away, again, this is something an animal will instinctively do to comfort themselves. So if you have an animal specifically that is licking at bedtime, especially the paw area, you won't, this doesn't include the tail or the back or anything. I'm specifically talking about the paws, okay? Then my experience has shown through the communication with the animals that they are trying to comfort themselves. So you might observe, okay, what has happened through the day that might have stressed them, or more importantly, are you stressed? Because a lot of times what will happen too is, you know, the animals will absorb our excess energies, all right? This is part of what they do. They just have this unconditional love for us, June. And as a result, then, you know, nobody's sitting there usually, you know, when we're stressed out. We don't usually think about how we're stressing our animal companion also. And so nobody's sitting there saying, it's okay, baby, it's okay. You know, so what they will do is they'll start licking their paws. And it's just a comfort thing.
I would have never even thought of that. Often I joke around with my family, my friends, and I say, you know, today would be a great day for me to be the cat. I mean, my cat really has quite the charmed life. And I'm just curious, you made a comment that their stresses, what stresses do they possibly have? You know, which part of the yard to sleep in? You know, should I sleep on which pillow? Which birdhouse should I chase after? You know, what flowers should I trample on? What stresses do you, you know, I don't mean to make fun of it, but what possible stresses could my cat possibly have? I think she is so spoiled, and, you know, she's hysterical. I could sit there for an hour straight and just rub her head, and then the minute that I get up and I do something else, I could come back or just even move slightly, and if it's something that offends her, she'll bite me. And it's like, you know, what about all the last hour of rubbing your head? You know, there's no reciprocal love there. You know, it's like, it's all about what have you done for me now, or rather, not what have you done, but what have you done for me lately? She really has owned that whole concept. And, you know, I will admit, though, after a long, long day, especially if it's been very stressful, it's one of the greatest things that you can possibly have, where you come home and then all of a sudden you have this fur ball that comes up to you, and, you know, it's like, meow. And, you know, it's just such a great thing. And the same thing with my dog. I mean, my dog, I love coming home, and she was always happy to see me. No matter what happened, there was at least, you know, two creatures that were extremely happy to see me. And that was always just a wonderful, wonderful feeling. But, you know, once again, what stresses do they have?
Well, you know, some animals, and they will also, if they're under any kind of pressure to perform, you know, like performance animals or anything like that.
That's a different story. That's a completely different story, because I could see how stressed these animals are, especially if they are being exploited for entertainment purposes and whatnot. Or you see these idiots that have these little tiny dogs on leashes, and they're walking with their friends. The dog is 10 feet behind them or 10 feet ahead of them, and they kind of just yank them like a yo-yo and to pull them towards them, instead of realizing that, okay, the thing could get hit by a car, you know, all sorts of things could happen to the poor animal, and the dog is basically being strung along like an accessory, like a pull toy almost, and that I could see being really stressful. But you know, maybe I'm answering my own question.
Well, no, because a lot of times now, it's interesting because, again, most of my clients, cats, you know, are usually very solitary animals. That's one thing that they notice, you know, again, you know, especially like the big cats, you go out there and, but if they get too close to another cat, or if another cat is walking by your house, or they see another cat outside the window, or again, cats are normally solitary by nature. Most of my clients, they don't have one cat. They've got three or four cats. And so, and a lot of times we don't think about asking the existing cats, is it okay if I get another animal companion? Because, you know, most of the time they're probably going to say no. So anyway, we just go out and we get another cat and another cat. And so all of a sudden we have this dynamic going on inside the house that can also cause stress. If the cat's alone by itself through the day, depending upon, again, the maybe there's some loud noises through the day, people working, outside construction workers, or things we don't think about that we have desensitized to, because especially living in urban areas, we're so used to this, we don't hardly pay any attention to it. Plus, most of us are not in present moment. You know, we're always thinking about what we're going to do, what we've got to do, what we should do, blah, blah, blah. And so we just, you know, truly we're not there to even notice the noise. And with the cats particularly, you know, because they're a whole different little, and they've got a whole different energy system, by the way, June. And,
they're very territorial.
Well, but their electrical system is a lot different than dogs. And ours and dogs' electrical systems are identical. In other words, that's why we're able to give dogs a lot of the same stuff that we can take the cats, for instance, like essential oils. We can use essential oils with oils. That's an accent here. Sorry about that. The oils versus the essential oils that we cannot use with cats, because their whole electrical system is totally, totally different. Most people don't realize that.
Now,
what
exactly is an electrical system? Because I'm a little new to that.
Well,
I mean, as it is, Laura, when I bring up this stuff to my family, like, for example, I have one sibling in particular who I think she thinks I'm completely nuts, because she constantly looks at me like, how do you see this? How do you, you know, she just sees my cat as, you know, just another animal out there. She doesn't see how I can see the personality, the temperament, you know, the reactions. You know what I mean? And anybody who has a cat or a dog, you know how your cat and dog behave. You know when they're happy, you know when they're sad, you know when they're being spiteful. And cats especially are very good at demonstrating how spiteful they can be. What is their electrical system about?
Their electrical system is, you can think of it as their energy system, but for me it goes beyond that because it truly is their molecular makeup. Their chemistry. Their chemistry is different than dogs. So they really are created different. And this explains a lot of, I've always teased, you know, cats are from another planet, and we'll probably eventually prove that to be true. But they're, physiologically, though, they are a lot different than dogs. And so a lot of times, for instance, cats, you know, even what can stress them? Well, you know, you even moving something in the room can stress a cat.
So ridiculous, though. I mean, you know, my cat's sitting there, and God forbid if I move, I displace her comfort zone. It's like, oh, come on.
Yeah, this is called what I call displacement behavior. Now, these are other things that can cause the licking, because any change in an environment, and cats particularly, you know, dogs. I very seldom work with a dog that gets as uptight, you know, as a cat will, but a change of environment, whether it be moving an object, because, you know, you can walk in the room and you've moved something and you watch your kitty come in and all of a sudden they stop, you know, and you think, oh, my, what, you know, and you're looking around. But and then they crouch, you know, they gingerly crouch.
Oh, yeah.
You know that move, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then you think, is that all? You know, but the environment to an animal, and the big cats taught me this, their environment is everything, everything.
Well, that's their home. That's their territory. Cats are extremely territorial.
Ours, too, but we have forgotten that because, again, we've disconnected. They're still connected, okay? So they're showing us because their environment literally means, could mean survival, you know, and us too, you know, because right now, not to digress, but, you know, a lot of times we've desensitized to the chemicals in the air and the pollution and everything else, and so we don't really realize that maybe we're staying in an area somewhere that's not in our highest and best good for us. But if we watch our animals, okay, they're going to show us. So a change, you know, what can stress out your singular cat, you know, or again, if they see another cat moving outside their house or anything, yeah, you know, it's a territorial thing. Or different music, or you know, there's
mine
a lot
is
of
with her food bowl. If you move her food bowl, like I frequently will change. I'll give her, like, she has her own set of pottery that I use for her water and for her food. And I guess she has a particular preference for certain types of dishes. And if I change it, she almost looks annoyed. I mean, you know, I don't know if this makes any sense. To me, when I look at her, just the reaction, she almost looks at me like, you know, what did you touch that for?
Well, yes. I've worked with animals, again, a lot of different kind of animals, even the ones that have been on the streets for a long time, and or, you know, the stainless steel bowls can even freak some of them out because they were, things were thrown at them that looked like that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But what happens is a lot of times, again, if they didn't learn the necessary, if your animal has not learned a lot of the necessary life skills early on in life, for whatever reason, they will often, again, the areas that I've noticed when I'm talking with them, the predominant areas that they will lick are their paws and legs and at night, okay? So that's one clue.
Now, excuse me for one second. I just want to stop you there. What do you mean by necessary life skills? And is there anything that you can do if your cat or dog, well, it's mostly cats, but if they don't have these necessary life skills, can you teach them?
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah, teaching cat life skills. We can market this one, Jim, if you figure that one out.
Well,
yeah.
I see your point. It seems to be really ridiculous, but you know something? You work with animals very closely. I can't say that I've had the experience that you have, obviously. Otherwise, you would be interviewing me. But I do know one thing. I've had a lot of success with the animals that I have adopted and care for as far as teaching them good behavior. I think through love, affection, and a lot of attention, I've been able to do that. So I don't think that it's something that is impossible. I didn't say it's easy, but it's not impossible. But one of the things that I have noticed, just to demonstrate this, I had this other cat that actually was my sister's cat. I was taking care of it for a while, a very long while. And I remembered when I adopted, his name was Fred, by the way, a big, white, fluffy cat, really beautiful cat. And I remember adopting my dog, Sammy. And when I adopted Sammy, Fred, before Sammy came, Fred used to sit on the back porch stoop, and he used to sun himself. He was the happiest cat. And he used to walk around, you know, his tail in the air, just happy, happy, happy. The minute that I brought Sammy home from the shelter, his ears went down. He used to do the hunching thing that you mentioned before. He used to hunch down and he used to sneak around like he was some type of a secret spy. And I would tell my sister this, and she would just look at me as though I had three heads. And the thing is that this was the behavior that I noticed, that I observed with my cat. And I'm not completely nuts. I know many other people that have cats and dogs that will concur that, yeah, you know, they've noticed significant differences in their animal's behavior. And what he would do, whenever I would give Sammy a walk, usually in the evening, Fred would follow. He would, you know, crunch down and kind of sneak and follow us a couple of blocks, and then he would head back to the house. I guess because he realized that, okay, the house is free and clear for his own use until we return, of course. But I just noticed the behavior, and it was almost as if he was jealous, but also he felt, if he were a child, I would have thought that, wow, you know, his behavior is indicative of someone who feels neglected or feels as though they did something wrong. So I made it a point to give a lot of affection and attention to Fred. And I bought more catnip treats and stuff like that. So, you know, there were ways until he got used to Sammy being there. But now these are things that you really need to pay attention to, I think. And I guess just pointing it out is the hardest part because, I mean, I guess because of my amusement with my own animal companions, I noticed it right away. But, you know, somebody like one of my siblings, they wouldn't notice it even if you filmed it and pointed it out.
Well, and the thing, too, is that instead of trying to change behavior, because, again, people, we can love our animals, we can do a lot of things, but they're like people. You know, I've known a lot of people, myself included, that if I've had an experience and it's kind of pushed to the back of my mind or buried, and I don't really think about it, but it will be reflected somewhere in my behavior because it has to be, because I will see my world through that experience. And if it wasn't a good one, now, albeit it may be a very subtle thing, but it's still going to affect me. So what I choose to do and what I teach and share with my clients is energy balancing, which we'll talk about in a moment, because I really want to talk about also, especially with cats. Cats can also lick because they're trying to absorb vitamin D. And also they will lick. Now, if your animal's licking odd things, like, you know, I have a lot of dogs sometimes that eat their own poo, or they're licking concrete or wood. Now, I've had a couple of clients that were, the guardians were calling them termites. You know, they were Great Pyrenees. Savannah, then and here, and literally we're eating her woodwork, and, you know, they'd gone through entertainment centers and everything else. And what was that all about? Well, in their particular case, it was boredom, and they were very used to having her around and everything. But if they're licking inanimate objects, this can be, they can, again, you'll have to check with your vet, but I have often found doing a medical scan myself as a medical intuitive that they have, that they're anemic. And so they are trying to get what they need, just like when they lick us, you know, they, cats especially, will get the salt off of our skin and also moisture, because a lot of, again, cats that I work with don't drink enough water. And so they'll sit there and they will start licking you and licking you and licking you, you know, and you just want to move them to a new spot so that, you know, you've already had your bath there. Let's keep, you know, moving them around. But literally they're absorbing salt and also the moisture, trying to get that off of you, especially cats. Now, again, they can also, cats and dogs, show us, and this gets into the traditional Chinese medicine, we want to look, June, where they're licking, specifically where they're licking, because that's going to show us a meridian. And in traditional Chinese medicine, these are the invisible energy lines that we all have in and around us. And so we can identify the organ or the system that we're working with to give us clues as to where the core issue is located. For instance, on the back, and especially near the midpoint to lower back, if they start trying to over-groom there, this can be either a neurological, anything along the spine. I have found, again, patterns that can be neurological. So that would be one place that we would want to, inconsistently, you know, it's like, well, okay, why don't they lick their feet, or why don't they lick their belly, or why don't, you know, why the back? You have to ask yourself, why are they licking where they're licking? So, you know, it has to, excuse me, occur to us at some point to just ask, okay, why are you doing that there? And so,
yeah, but if you're not used to doing, you know, like, not everybody's you, Laura. What if, you know, you really don't have any clue? It's not like your dog's going to turn around and say, well, you know what I mean?
No, but if you sit, that's what I'm saying. But if you sit and ask yourself, okay, why is my companion licking where they are licking? In other words, well, why aren't they licking somewhere else? See, that right there, if we can think of asking ourselves, okay, why there? That's going to give us a clue as to where we can find the answer, okay? And physically in the body. And so, again, it may be a kidney meridian. It may be the liver. Also, ears. You know, a lot of times they will lick each other's ears, cats specifically and everything. Well, this can be for several reasons also. Another cat is trying to calm the other one down because, again, in traditional Chinese medicine, there is a relationship between ears and kidneys. Now, this applies in people, too. So if you have an ear problem, generally, you've got and again, not necessarily the organ itself, but the energy in the meridian going to that organ, which if it's not balanced at some point in time over, you know, a period of time, that organ will get weak and you will have a physiological problem there.
Wow.
But a lot of times the ears also, they've got a yeast infection, all right? And so, which means candida. So we're talking about an intestinal problem, all right? And so they will try to clean those ears and lick and stimulate the energy. This is another reason animals lick a lot. They do their own energy work. And so what they will do is, because their energy gets as stagnant or stuck in them as it does in ourselves. And so in order to, and instead of them going and getting a massage like we do or acupuncture, a lot of times they will try to do their own energy work So they, but it's mistaken for grooming.
Interesting.
And what they're doing is they're stimulating their area of the body, which has become blocked, okay, or they're trying to release an excess of energies so that their body will heal. And there's, again, you can, in those cases, you can start to rub or massage, help them, you know, kind of, if you don't know anything else, kind of just lightly start massaging that area, you know, so to help kind of get that energy flowing a little bit. Even if you have any doubts or think, well, I wonder if that's really what that could be or something, just start lightly massaging and seeing if, you know, if that will help them. Okay, now you might have to do it 2 or 3 days in a row or a couple of times a day, but just, and it doesn't take long, just a couple of minutes with animals, okay? And so the other thing is, feel if the area where they're licking is hot. Because a lot of times, excuse me, if it is, for example, a cat's tongue is its thermostat, okay? So if cats are cold, they will often start licking themselves to fluff their hair up to make themselves warmer. Okay. Or if they're too hot, they will lick to cool themselves down. And because a cat's saliva can serve as a cooling mechanism. Now, again, this is a natural way to, you know, for them to...
Yeah, just like a dog.
Right, to regulate. Now, of course, and how many of us do have cats, you know, after we've picked them up and everything and loved on them, and then they go and then they start grooming. It's like, oh, they want to get all of those, whatever I've given to them, off of them, you know, because it's like, okay, I get it, but, and they will do that, you know, they'll start grooming themselves to replace, you know, they want your scent off of them and everything. It's a self-protection mechanism, but again, you can, if you've got a cat, you know, they like perfect care face. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And
now, speaking of cats, we actually have a caller who is a huge cat lover, and she's also a big fan of the show. Lydia, are you on the line?
Yes, Sam. Hi.
Hi, Lydia.
Hi, Laura.
Welcome
Hi,
to the show. And Lydia has a beautiful feline named Felix.
Yes, and okay. I always, you know, call him the divine feline because he just really has this this air around him, very majestuous and just really royal. And, you know, His Royal Highness is just next to me taking a nap. He's not grooming at the moment. And he's just having such, you know, such subliminal messages sending along, you know, saying, okay, well, you know, do ask Laura about what it is that I have that I'm just totally nuts about, the Apple charger cables, because no other charger cables are just as, you know, wonderful as Apple's. So please do tell me.
Is he chewing on them?
No, he actually licks them to death. And then, yes, eventually he will get his teeth in if I don't watch it. But I usually hear him lick it before he can get the teeth in it. Because I know for a fact that if they are charging and if they're plugged in, it can be lethal for him. So
okay,
I just need to find what the source is. I mean, if he needs more energy, I can you know, see if I can get a feline recharger hub or something like that. I don't know.
Give him some catnip. Well, the thing is, also, let me ask you real quick, because I'm going to have to ask Felix this, and we're going to do an animal communication thing real quick. But are there other chargers in the house? And he doesn't mess with those, just specifically the Apple charger, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Oh, he hears himself. He hears you.
Okay, hold on, because you see, then automatically, logically, you would go, well, yeah, it's, why not the other chargers also? So, because if he's just wanting energy, okay, and I'm going step by step for you all so that people who are listening can also go through the same process, because I don't want everybody to think, oh, yeah, she talks to animals. What's easy for her? What do I do? You know, so, okay, again, the question, okay, well, I've got other chargers in the house. Why does Felix have a proclivity towards my Apple charger? Because, you know, okay, there's, see, and animals don't do things arbitrarily, Lydia and June. Mm-hmm. They really do, you know, they have a reason. They're not like us that, you know, hey, this is the way I feel today. I'm going to just do this for, you know, let's, for no reason. Okay. So let me ask Felix real quick why he is specifically doing the Apple charger. This would be interesting because there is a chemical that is what he is telling me that is, hold on just a minute. I wish there were ways we could prove this right now because
I'd like to videotape it personally and show it to my sister.
There's a chemical. What I'm hearing from him is it's a chemical makeup. So evidently, the chemicals that go into this charger are totally different than the other chargers. And let me ask him if we can identify what he's lacking or what he's needing because it's almost like. Hold on just a minute. Okay, Lydia, may I ask you a question with him?
Sure.
Okay, you feed him mostly moist food. Is that correct?
I try to alternate with the dry food, but he's not too keen on the dry food.
That's correct. He likes moist food. That's why I need to feed him moist food. He's not a fan of dry food at all. This is what he's telling me. I would personally cut out all the dry food because if he's not keen on it, that's why, sweetheart. He doesn't like the dry food. Okay, moist food. This has to do a supplement. Hold on just a minute. If you can, if you will get, there is a product called, you've got an accent. Where are you?
I'm in Brussels, Belgium.
Oh, I don't know if they, well, they might have this. He's needing some trace minerals, and there's a real good product called, I use it, called Cat Essentials. Oh, who's that by?
I'll look it up.
I guess it's a health food store. Hopefully you can Google that. But there's some trace minerals, and what he was telling me is in the moist food, if you put, like, he wants that in his moist food, but it is a trace mineral that he is lacking, and evidently, whatever Apple does whatever they're putting in there, or you know how they make their stuff, or maybe even a protective coating or something. Anyway, he's getting this one particular, and I don't know if it's molybdenum or it's not cadmium, because I was asking him what this trace mineral is. But anyway. If you can supplement a little bit with the trace mineral, totally cut out the dry. He's not a fan of that. Mm-hmm. You're going to see him not lick the charger anymore. By the way, we really need to share with him that that's pretty dangerous and that he could be like graveyard dead if he continues to do that.
Yeah.
Because that's really not a very healthy thing for him, so I'll share that with him also.
No, I told him that, you know, that he can go on licking all kinds of other plastics, but that this is just a no-no. And I think by hiding the charger cable, it, you know, annoys me more than him.
I don't always find
it back.
Yeah, it's not the plastic that he's licking. It is a, that there is a chemical that they have put in there that he likes. And then, now that points out a good thing because, you see, Felix then has started what a lot of animals will do, and they can develop OCD just like people, you know what I mean? In other words, again, an energy pattern starts to happen, and then it's just like a habit. It becomes a habit. And mm-hmm. so with that, we have to break the energy cycle is what I like to refer it to as because if we can just, you know, change something like, again, put up the charger, or if you notice him doing that at a certain time of day or whatever, do you notice him doing that at a certain time of the day?
No. Actually, I'm hiding the cables now because I prefer not for him to lick it since, you know, sometimes when I don't take it away and it stays in the plug, it's just too dangerous, so I just take it away.
Yeah, if you will, if you can get him on a some kind of a trace mineral, he's not going to be doing that. And that's kind of interesting because, again, I keep talking about animals and their saliva. You know, they hold a lot of healing chemicals themselves. You know, a lot of times when we get cut or if we've got a heart spot or something like that, you know, animals will come over and start licking us because they know. In fact, it was documented that a man was paralyzed, his one leg was paralyzed, and his dog kept licking it every day because he couldn't feel it, you know, so what's the deal, you know. But the man can now walk because after a period of time, those chemicals were absorbed by his skin, and the stimulation that dog did, just stimulating the energy in that man's leg just by licking, okay? And what's the first thing we do if we get a cut on our finger or something? We put it in our mouth, don't we?
Yeah.
Because we intuitively see we've got healing chemicals there in our saliva, and so the saliva contains enzymes that will act as an antibiotic. Okay, and a lot of times if they are licking a wound, let them lick it because they're cleaning out the parasites, they're cleaning out the bacteria from that wound, all right? And this is something that we have forgotten because, you know, we've got vets and we've, you know, got all this technology and everything. Going back to the old-time medicine and everything, you know, animals instinctively know as we do, but we've just forgotten how to...
Well, I just... saying this is really interesting. Sorry, I'm interrupting you because I'm a bit in a rush. I have seen on YouTube, I think, you know, that a cat was actually either performing CPR on his dead mate or just giving him a massage, but right over the top of the rib cage where the heart would be. And he tried to reanimate his dead mate. He was really, you know, just instinctively putting his paws rhythmically, not just in the, you know, normal way that cats do the kneading, rhythmically just massaging that area. It was just amazing to see that. That was on YouTube, yes.
Oh, you've got to send
and
me that.
Poor cat, yeah, I don't think I have bookmarked it, but, you know, if you
I will
put
find
in,
that, folks. I will feature, find that, and that will be posted.
Yeah, I'm sure it will find that. It's just instinctively trying to reanimate the poor thing. And then there is another clip on YouTube where I think an antelope baby is being rescued from a hippopotamus. The hippopotamus actually rescued the antelope baby from a crocodile. And it took it out from the water and tried to reanimate the poor thing that was almost, you know, dying, and I don't know whether it died or not, but it's just instinctively also trying to do the mouth to mouth, and he took the whole head into his mouth in order to reanimate the animal. So I just thought, you know, in case people are out there who are listening, there's so much more to what you're doing is just such an amazing job. I just, you know, find it very inspiring. And also for Felix, he's probably thanking you, you know, that he's getting more attention as to what he needs. And
I would like to do more
research on that.
Yeah, it's really incredible because, again, you know, we and thank you so much for that, Lydia. I greatly appreciate it. But we really, you know, and even to the point where cats, you know, hold certain chemicals, again, where they can waterproof their own hair. So if they know that, you know, like, especially outside, it's going to rain or whatever, I will see feral cats grooming themselves a lot more because they're getting their hair waterproofed. Now, again, this can be counterproductive because when we have animals that have surgery or have gone through some kind of trauma that, you know, they'll try to lick themselves to reduce their pain. They also lick because of pain management. And but then, you know, they can overdo it because in trying to stimulate their healing process, you know, they'll actually remove sutures or drainage support or whatever. But I think, again, you know, and also I want to bring up the time of day because there's something called the circadian body clock. June and Lydia, that every 2 hours, energy moves in and out of our body, emphasizing a certain organ. In other words, if your cat or dog licks you up, it's not uncommon between, like, let's say, 1 and 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, licking and grooming. Well, I always consider this as part of the puzzle because from 1 to 3, the energy, the body clock rhythms, are moving for the liver. 3 to 5, it's lung. 5 to 7, it's large intestines. 7 to 9, it's stomach. You know, we can kind of get a clue there also, depending on if you recognize the pattern. Okay, are they doing this at the same time every day? Well, if they are, look for the circadian. It's C-I-R-C-A-D-I-A-N rhythms. That is our natural body rhythms. People too, that because even when I'm administering medicine or flower essences, which by the way is a real good solution for licking, there are certain flower essences that we can use, but I will even ask the client to give them at a certain time of day, because if we're going to target like the large intestines, I will have it between, you know, the 5 and 7 in the morning, that, you know, because it's going to really go right there. It will target the large intestines more than we're working with what is what we're doing. I'm working with the forces of nature. And it's just effortless. It works so well. You know, we're not trying to go against anything that's not natural here. And you're going to see the difference a lot quicker. Some of the I don't know if you've got any more questions, but our food allergies. This can even be as much as 35%. If you're not feeding them the right food, or if they have an allergic reaction, because one of the things that we'll do, the skin will detox. In other words, it's got to try to come out of the body somehow, and so it's going to probably come out through the skin. And with that, then we can sit and say, okay, well, let me evaluate the food. Now, there's other things we can do, like muscle testing or kinesiology, which we can identify what is what I call biocompatible and biomedicinal for the animal, which means that, okay, is this food not stressing the immune system? We want to be feeding our animals food that does not stress the immune system. And then also, ideally, I want to feed an animal something that's biomedicinal, which means it acts as a medicine, like macrobiotics. And where we can use food as medicine, so we've got a double whammy there, and where it's working with your immune system, but it's also acting as a medicinal source for that animal. But allergies are huge, huge. Food allergies are huge that will cause animals to lick and also have skin breakouts. Now, sometimes the animal can be doing a detox, and we have skin eruptions, or, you know, you'll notice some kind of weird thing that, you know, wasn't there yesterday. And sometimes the worst thing we can do is put something on it because, see, then that drives it back into the body, and we don't want to drive it back into the body if it's trying to come out. And that's why a lot of times with the steroids and things, I'm not a big fan of, there's a time and place for everything. I like to just kind of observe and go the natural route first, because I like working with nature instead of putting synthetics, or like prednisone is a huge thing that, you know, is often recommended for these animals that itch and lick.
Yeah, it doesn't really do anything. I remember my vet did that with Belle for something, and it did nothing. But now, you know, I'm going to take a look at her and see, you know, maybe there's something else that's going on. But I have one more question, Laura. Lydia, I just want to thank you for calling.
Thank you, such a big fan of the show.
You're welcome. Laura, really quickly, we have a gal named Linda Liu on Twitter that has a question. She wrote that she has a pom mix, and he hates other dogs, so it's hard to walk him in her neighborhood. What should she do? She said that he barks and snarls at other dogs and people, but he's very loving to the family.
Okay, well, this is something other than looking in. Okay, a lot of times, and I would have to talk with the animal because this is not promoting my business or anything. I don't generalize with animal behavior. However, for possibilities, okay, let me give you some general things that could be size often matters to some animals. So he can feel, and a lot of times what I find is that they're not being aggressive. It's fear aggression. In other words, he's fearing for his own safety or being very territorial as far as he's making a preemptive strike, possibly, as far as what he is doing, okay? And just telling the other animals, hey, don't even try to mess with me, you know? Just don't even go there. So he's preempting anything that other animals might do. Depending upon where she's walking and everything, I've also seen it where these animals can also kind of clue us in as to, you know, other people, their behavior, either other animals and their behavior. A lot of times also, if she will double check her state of being, in other words, because it's very easy when you start walking your animal and they're being aggressive and everything else, then you start to get real tense and all of a sudden you've got a psychological conditioning happening in you.
Interesting, yeah.
You see that you're expecting your animal companion to, you know, well, he's done it before, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, now it's become a habit. It truly has been. So if she will also relax and with the intention when she goes out with her animal companion that, you know, you're going to get along with everybody, you know, and she talks with him as she's walking him. See, everybody's friendly. There's no, reassure the animal that he's safe, that nothing's going to hurt him, okay? And she can do this mentally. She can visualize it before she goes out, actually visualize a walk before she walks him. But just put that intention out there, a heart intention, that he's very, very safe and nothing's going to hurt him. If I were working with this animal, I would want to address his fear issues very much, very much.
Now, it's interesting that she has that type of a problem. I had the opposite problem with my dog. I have a neighbor that has, I think, 3 Dobermans, and even though my dog was a Roddy Pit, she's a Roddy Pit mix, she was petrified of these Dobermans, and the Dobermans, I don't really think that they were bigger than her, but they had a really nasty-sounding bark, and she would hide behind me. She's petrified of them. And I just thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, I've got this dog that has that jaw, and she hears a little Dobie and she, you know, hides behind my skirt.
Yeah, a lot of this is not going to make sense. And again, I don't generalize because when I go and talk with an animal, I'm an open mind. I mean, I don't have any, somebody can tell me this is the behavior and whatever. I make no assumptions. I have no preconceived ideas, nothing, clean slate, so that when I talk with the animal, because it can be from, you know, possibly they were attacked or if they've been a puppy mill baby or even in the shelter or, you know, maybe they did have a neighbor at the shelter that, you know, fought with them and they were that kind of breed of dog and that reminds them or the energy reminds them of a bad experience, you know, something because animals also experience post-traumatic stress just like we do. And so I just go in open mind and then they will specifically tell me what the core issue is and then we address it from there. But to kind of give it a blanket statement is kind of challenging because I don't want everybody to think just because, you know, you're walking your, you have this problem when you walk your dog on the leash and everything that applies across the board because it does not. Flower essences are very good, real quick, June, to help your animal get over any kind of licking. And I want to recommend a couple of them by Bach, B-A-C-H, specifically.
Oh, yeah, Bach Essentials, aren't they in London or in the UK someplace?
Yeah, and but you get them here. But one of them is cherry plum, which is very, very good for licking. And another one is chicory, C-H-I-C-O-R-Y.
And these are essential oils?
There are essential oils that you can work with. I like the Young Living. I think they're the best on the planet. But they, again, I try to consider budgets, you know, what people, you know, can realistically afford right
afford,
now.
Yeah. Exactly.
But essential oils are a little more expensive. Yes, we can work with them. Now, again, you have to be careful with cats, okay? So unless I'm specifically working with someone, I don't recommend across-the-board essential oils. The flower essences, yes, they're very natural. They're very easy to give, and you will see some tremendous results with the animals. You know, working with these flower essences, you can also use crystals. You can, again, energy work, because there's a great book that I would recommend for anyone called, I'm such a promoter, Four Paws, Five Directions.
And what is it about, Laura?
By Cheryl Swartz. This is strictly an energy book. In other words, you can locate, it shows acupuncture points, it shows the meridians on cats and dogs, so that if you can locate essentially the spot that you're looking at on your animal, okay, and say, oh, maybe that's the liver. Oh, they're looking at liver. Okay, what can I do for the liver?
Okay.
All right, well, then you can go to, they've got different chapters on the different organs, different acupuncture points and massage points.
And this stuff is scientifically proven?
Well, acupuncture has been around for 5,000 years.
Well, acupuncture, yes, that's true. It's just for the people that are out there saying, you know, does this stuff really work? But you said it's Four Paws by Cheryl Swartz?
It's Four Paws, Five Directions.
Oh, Five Directions. Okay.
Uh-huh. By Cheryl, Cheryl Swartz, Schwartz. Well, you know, if people don't think energy work works, you know, think about what you do every day. Because, you know, how good does it feel to go get your hair washed and get your, you know, your scalp massaged? Or even when you're hugging somebody, or, you know, you are stroking a baby, or we do energy work all the time. We just don't think about it being energy work. But the essence of it is, whenever we touch anybody, we're doing therapeutic touch.
I guess, Laura, if there were a big price tag on it, and if there were spas all over that featured these services in that very way, then maybe we would be more receptive and accepting of it. But, you know, you make a very, very excellent point that, you know, we accept acupuncture, so, yeah, why not? It really does make perfect sense.
And I think right now with the economy, again, the animals are helping us to get back to simplifying our lives, getting us back to basics, getting us back in touch with ourselves. And, you know, I like to empower the people I work with. And they want to be educated. They want to look at things a little bit differently, and they're very open. And so with that, and a lot of times, you know, if you're out, or, you know, how many times does this happen at night? And, you know, where's your vet? Unless you've got the cell phone number, you know, try an emergency visit for $400 or $500, you know. And a lot of people just can't afford that. So in order to not let your animal companion go without, okay, and suffer, what can I personally do? Well, I might not have a lot of experience on this work, but you know what? I love my baby so much, I'm going to do anything.
You're absolutely correct, and many people feel the same way. You know, and you know something, folks, whether you want to agree with Laura says or if you don't, at least explore it. I mean, I know that there are a lot of people that are kind of on the fence. They're like, well, you know, I don't know. But you know something? Really just take a look at it, because the thing is that I know personally I've brought my cat to the vet several times. And actually, I had a cat many years ago that the vet didn't know what was wrong with her. And I literally spent thousands of dollars just because of the tests, not even thinking about what those tests must have been like for her. But, you know, from my perspective, I was just looking at the dollar signs, because I spent quite a fortune on all these different tests, and most people would have said, you know, why did you bother? Well, you know, well, my cat. But the bottom line is that this is information here for you to consider. You know, check it out. You might find that the information might only help you in the long run to not only provide a better environment for your cat or dog, but also your cat will be much healthier. And you won't be forking over money for all these pills and shots and so on and so forth. I mean, if you could do things without all the drugs, that's basically the issue here, folks. So, you know, Laura...
not working.
Exactly. And, you know, I just want to quickly allude to what I was saying earlier, that with my own cat, I brought her to the vet, and the vet said, you know, no fleas, no nothing, but, you know, just be on the safe side. Let's give her a shot of cortisone. And now that I know what I know, I would have objected. But, you know, if that was then, this is now, and knowledge is always great to have, but you kind of wish that you had it, you know, way back when. So, you know, but
things will work real quick, June. Prednisone, but they're Band-Aids. They're just Band-Aids. And so, and the harm that they're doing to the body. And so why go to the essence? Let's identify the core issue so that we eliminate all the symptoms and we're, you know, we've got it prominently taken care of. So.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, that's really what it all boils down to look for a solution, not just a quick fix. So, Laura, thank you so much for just addressing that and for really, you know, hitting it right on the head and giving all sorts of wonderful information about, you know, not just a recommendation, but stuff that you use yourself. And I think that's where that's what really matters, because if you're using something on your own animal companions and it's effective, then, you know, and you're the expert here, then it's something that definitely everybody should consider. I think once people start traveling outside of their little comfort zone and they start looking at some of these different things that are may seem a little foreign or just a little bizarre to them, and they start really looking at all of the work that's been done and how much it's really helped, perhaps people will break away from that whole, I guess, way of thinking where, you know, if it's not in a pill or a shot form, then it's not going to work. So, you know, but Laura, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
Do you have any last suggestions for our listeners?
Just observe your, you know, your animal companion and let them teach you even about your own body. And, again, remember it's a form of communication. They're trying to tell you something. They're not sitting there just doing this to annoy you, contrary to, you know, what we may think.
Yeah, that's a really big thing. But, Laura, thank you so much. It's always great having you. And
thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.